Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 5th of June 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, and myself, Brian Gerrish.
Well,
Trump.
Yeah.
Ton.
Yes, indeed. Well, so he decided to run a equivalent of the state banquet last night in the American building, whatever it is. I don't think it's the embassy. I'm not really sure where they held it. But anyway, Charles and the Duchess of Cornwall were there, so it was pretty exciting. Oh, Winfield House, that's where it is, where it was. And so this was the second day of his state visit. The mainstream media, of course, absolutely delighted that he's here. The criticism of his comments about the protests, about it being a relatively small protest and therefore the coverage of it in the media being fake news, is in turn getting a lot of backlash from the mainstream media. But anyway, the Charles and the Duchess of Cornwall were representing the Queen, apparently, because she didn't want to go to this one. And among the guests were Theresa May, of course, Philip May, her husband. Jeremy Hunt was there, and none other than the King of England, Mark Sedwell. Of course, we call him that because he is the head of the Cabinet Office. He is National Security Advisor. He's head of the Civil Service. And this is really the first time we've ever had one person occupying all these jobs. Now, John Bolton is here with Trump, and he's the US National Security Advisor, so they've been getting on very well. But Mark Sedwell being invited to this dinner at Winfield House. Earlier in the day, Theresa and Trump held a press conference. I thought we might listen to a couple of seconds of this.
So I am very pleased to welcome the President of the United States of America on this state visit to the United Kingdom. For the past 2.5 years, the President and I have had the duty and privilege of being the latest guardians of this precious and profound friendship between our countries. As with our predecessors, when we have faced threats to the security of our citizens and our allies, we have stood together and acted together. When Russia used a deadly nerve agent on the streets of our country, alongside the UK's expulsions, the President expelled 60 Russian intelligence officers, the largest contribution towards an unprecedented global response. And in Syria, when innocent men, women and children were victims of a barbaric chemical weapons attack, Britain and America, along with France, carried out targeted strikes against the regime.
So Theresa May doubling down on the lie of the Douma chemical weapons attack and the resulting bombing campaign by the UK and the United States and France. But unprecedented good relations.
Nauseating, I think, is my description. Nauseating insincerity by a failed prime minister. And what's the aim? It's more propaganda, Mike, isn't it, to support this agenda?
It gets better.
Since we spoke about NATO during my first visit to the White House, we have maintained our support for this crucial alliance. Thanks in part to your clear message on burden sharing, Donald, we have seen members pledge another $100 billion, increasing their contributions to our shared security. And I'm pleased to announce that NATO will soon be able to call on the UK's Queen Elizabeth-class aircraft carriers and F-35 fighter jets to help tackle threats around the world.
Brian, I find it tricky not to just burst out laughing at that point. Should Donald Trump be impressed? How many aircraft carriers has he got? What size are they? What's the combined tonnage of his aircraft carriers compared to Queen Elizabeth II? Should he be impressed by this?
The answer is no, Mike. I think it's 13, and of course the latest American carrier is absolutely vast. But we haven't even got a proper aircraft carrier because we haven't got a full air complement on it, and we have none of the supporting naval infrastructure to go with that carrier. So this is just a puff piece. It's quite astonishing what's going on here. The Navy, of course, cut to the bone like the Army to assist EU Defence Union. But we're selling one aircraft carrier because that is all that's really at sea at the moment as being a major contribution to NATO. If we go back to the end of the Cold War period, the Royal Navy was covering much of the anti-submarine warfare and the whole eastern part of the Atlantic. So this is something out of a cartoon comedy show.
If you think that Theresa May's language is comedic, the language in the press release that goes with this was even worse, because apparently the F-35 fighter jets that are going to be on the Queen Elizabeth II are formidable. And we should all be extremely...
formidable in their problems.
Well, indeed. Mm. Indeed. Well, what did Penny Mordaunt have to say? Be it projecting influence for peace, standing ready to fight, or delivering vital aid around the world, HMS Queen Elizabeth and her sister ship, HMS Prince of Wales, will fly the flag of a global Britain.
Yes. Well, we're going to come back onto this lady a little bit later in her new role, of course, so it's going to be interesting to... see how that looks.
Right. So this is all about NATO's readiness initiative, which they say aims to improve the readiness of the alliance's forces to deploy and move within Europe and across the Atlantic to safeguard international security. The UK will look to make its aircraft carrier a key part of these plans as the country continues to play a leading role in the alliance, which has been the cornerstone of its defence for 70 years. At the Defence Ministers' meeting in June, allies committed by 2020 to have 30 battalions, 30 air squadrons and 30 naval combat vessels ready for use within 30 days. This was reinforced by allied heads of state and government at the NATO summit in July. So that's good stuff. The question is, what are they getting ready for? Well, as we heard in the earlier clip, clearly Russia, a concern for Theresa May and Donald Trump. Well, is it? Here is Neil Bush, the UK ambassador to the OSCE, and he was giving a speech a few days ago saying the security challenges we currently face are not somehow the fault of NATO or NATO allies. NATO is not a threat to Russia. It is a defensive alliance which is transparent and consistent. Well, we should be very impressed by that. So let's listen to what Jens Stoltenberg was saying in Poland. Yesterday.
Earlier this spring, NATO agreed to invest $260 million in a major project to store and maintain US military equipment pre-positioned in central Poland. This is NATO's biggest investment in military infrastructure in more than 30 years.
So, Brian, NATO is not a threat to Russia, but NATO is going to pre-position US arms and material in central Poland. Why would they be pre-positioning stuff there?
It's very simple, Mike. You want to pre-position so that you've got the equipment you need ready to go when the troubles start. So clearly this is admitting that there is going to be trouble on the eastern border, and so you're getting all the heavyweight equipment in position ready to go. So how would the Russians respond to this? They would see this as a threat, because more military equipment is being brought up to the border. And the other thing we need to remind people, of course, is that the EU has been boasting of its ongoing programme to build the military superhighways, as the EU is calling it, to take even more material to the eastern front.
Absolutely. So here is some material on the eastern front. This is Exercise Noble Jump 2019. These are Norwegian tanks arriving for that. This is taking place at the moment and runs until the 14th of June. It's in Poland, as I say. So this is tanks from the Norwegian Army's Telemark Battalion rolling off a ship into a port. Well, this is Szczecin in northern Poland. As part of Exercise Noble Jump, the exercise tests NATO's ability to deploy the land component of the NATO Response Force, specifically the Very High Readiness Joint Task Force. Four NATO allies are involved in this particular training: Germany, Netherlands, Norway and Poland. And the NATO Response Force, or NRF, is a multinational force made up of land, air, maritime and special operation forces components. So they're going to be exercising in Poland over the next few days with quite a bit of heavy armour, it seems.
Yeah.
As we just finished watching that tank being driven onto the train there, the question is, where does this end? We've been wondering what the new Ukrainian president's attitude to NATO and the EU was going to be. Well, now we know, because he is now, well, Let's listen to it with his own words.
We are ready to negotiate with Russia. We are ready to implement the Minsk agreements. However, we must first be able to protect ourselves and to become stronger in economic, political, and military terms. The strategic course of Ukraine to achieve full-fledged membership in the EU and NATO, which is secured in the Constitution of Ukraine, remains unchanged.
So there's our answer. Membership of the EU, membership of NATO, that remains unchanged. That's Volodymyr Zelensky, of course. He was commenting yesterday because he was visiting NATO for the first time. Brian, I was fascinated by, just taking the still from the video,
yes,
by the look that Jens Stoltenberg is giving him. I don't know what you read into that.
Well, I read into it, make sure you get your speech correct. Make sure you get it right.
Yes.
And it's almost like a bird of prey summing up a rabbit. And, I think this is full of malevolence, this picture. And perhaps we should reinforce it. We've spent the opening section of segment of the news. We are talking about preparations for war on a new Eastern Front. There's no question that this is what is being cooked up. And of course, the European Defence Union is designed to bring in the super state military. What's really happening in UK at the moment? We can't run the roads, we can't run a proper hospital system, we can't run the schools, we can't look after our elderly people. None of this is part of the press anymore. All we're seeing is this building of a dictatorship in the EU. And of course, UK is fully locked into that due to the deceit of the Conservatives and Theresa May. It's unbelievably dangerous.
Absolutely. OK, if you like what the UK Column's doing and you'd like to support us, then please head over to ukcolumn.org/community where you can take out a membership. Your help is very, very much appreciated. As Brian says, we can only do what we do with that help. Another reminder that if you would like to pick up some AV10 DVDs, the set is available from the UK Column website. The URL is on screen at the moment.
Excellent. And just a reminder that this lady, Georgia Pulican, is still in England, and that is thanks to the generosity of people in UK and overseas. And of course, she has been reporting on the truth about what's really been happening to the French people under the assault of police at the hand of French President Macron. If you haven't seen that video interview, this on screen is an extract from UK Column website. Look for the lady in the yellow jacket and that'll take you through to text and ultimately a video. We've been really delighted at the response to an appeal for money to help this lady stay in UK. It's unsafe, we feel, for her to be in France at the moment. So the latest total that I saw before coming live is 2,731 of our £5,000 goal. So thank you very much to everybody who's donated for that. And I also say, remember what this lady is doing. She's giving a voice to the people of France because much of what she's talking about is not being reported by French mainstream media. And what is she doing? What are the French people doing? They're warning of the sheer brutality of Macron's EU superstate. And of course, we are talking and warning about EU Defence Union, because under EU Defence Union, it includes all military forces, it includes intelligence services, it also includes police. So if you are not aware of how bad things have got in France, have a look at that interview and some of the embedded film clips. But more to come in UK. A few days ago, we reported on this. It was an army document providing alert indicators for so-called extreme right-wing people. Indicators and warnings, look out for individuals who. And we highlighted that you could pick out things from this template which were extremely worrying. For example, anybody who described themselves as a patriot is being labelled extreme right wing. If you point a finger at what's going on in government and say this is treason, it's being committed by traitors, you are extreme right wing. if you make inaccurate generalities about left-wing politics or even the government itself, you are to be considered extreme right-wing. And it goes on to say that if you operate in a closed social media group, you are extreme right-wing. And if you dare to become angry at perceived injustices or real injustices, then you are extreme right-wing. And we'll end with this one. Refer to political correctness as some left-wing or communist plot. So there we are. We thought this was was very, very dangerous. And it was picked up by a few newspapers. The Sun, of course, went to the extreme, not right, furious military officers warned troops calling themselves patriots or generalising about the left could be right-wing extremists. So this was a very frothy article talking about this document from the army. It was reported a little bit more quietly in the Telegraph. How has Britain got to the point where even the army is suspicious of patriots? Now, I'm going to encourage people to read this article because there's a lot of good stuff in it. But the weakness is that the journalist herself simply doesn't realise that the army extreme right wing warp document is just one step of a far deeper, darker conservative agenda. And why are we saying this? Well, have a look at this headline. Send in the army. Defence Secretary Penny Mordaunt wants troops on the streets to tackle knife crime by mentoring youths and convincing them to sign up for, quote, military college. She's holding a conference at the moment where she wants to do more on social mobility.
And this is a normal thing for a Defence Secretary to want to deal with.
Well, Mike, what this lady is doing is just... mind-blowing. I can't put it any... People really need to see what this woman has started to do. She said that the army's ethos could make a real difference to young people. And there's a cross-government summit explaining how the military can work with communities. So we have seen the police via the prevent system being embedded in communities. And now we're seeing that the next step is to get the army embedded into communities. There's only one place this ends. Let's have a look at what she has to say. At a time of rising knife crime and prevalent gang culture in some parts of the UK, the army's ethos can make a real difference to young people. It can offer hope. Options include tasking soldiers with mentoring youngsters or attracting teenagers to, quote, military preparation colleges. She was struck by how these colleges has enthused those who other education establishments fail to inspire. Now, this is a twist because the military often does extremely well taking what can be difficult youngsters, getting a sense of discipline in them and bringing them through into a proper career progression and trades. There is no doubt that that's true. But now what we're doing is this is reverse engineering. We're taking those military skills and we're apparently using them to deal with social problems which the government has created itself in the first place. Yes. So this is very, very devious stuff. We reported this little diagram at the same time as we warned about the army's extreme right-wing document. And here we're showing that within UK community at the moment, we have a huge number of organisations and initiatives which are linking together public sector organisations, the police, the NHS, schools and social workers to report on members of the community, prevent there supposedly to stop terrorism, but what it's really doing is getting communities to report on each other. We've got Channel, which is a particular means of channeling reports into the prevent system. We've got the multi-agency public protection arrangements where there's been 63 mapper districts established across UK where people can be watched and monitored and reported on without them knowing what's going on. And now we've got the National Cyber Security Centre producing these warning advice and reporting points. And that's where the army document came from. That's where WARP, the acronym WARP, comes from. Just imagine that now on the top of this, we are to bring in the army. where the army people themselves have been trained to regard anybody who calls themselves a patriot as extreme right wing. This is unbelievably dangerous. It mirrors the Stasi system in East Germany, but it's being constructed here in UK in 2019 in front of our very eyes. We'll come back to Georgia Pulican here, because her video warning about what was happening in France and the brutality of the French state. Macron, of course, is a big believer in this integrated military and police system. Well, that video is over 20,000 views now. So if you haven't had a look, do have a look at that. We're reporting the numbers of people injured in France. These statistics not really reported in mainstream press. But even in France, we've got the same thing. We've got the call for more troops to come onto the streets. Now, this was from December 2018, so it's an old article, but nevertheless, in France, we've got paramilitary police now backed by the army in order to keep the population under control.
I just want to remind everybody, of course, it was Federica Mogherini and Jens Stoltenberg, if you remember, back in 2015, European Defence Agency conference, where they really introduced this subject of the merger of military and police functions. And around the same time, or within a month or two of that, we started to see reports from, you know, press releases from NATO about how they were deploying so-called non-lethal weapons to NATO personnel.
Yes.
And the question is, why would you deploy a non-lethal weapon to NATO personnel unless your intention is to use them for crowd control?
Exactly, Mike. So we're very much focusing on supposedly defence here, but this is something far deeper. I hope our audience will stay with us today. Let's have a little bit more about what Penny had to say. So here we are. The reality is the world is changing and the threats increasing from a diverse range of sources. As earlier speakers have said, cyber attack is now the new normal. Between 2016 and 2017, NATO saw such attacks on its infrastructure increasing by 60%. Whether the origin is Russia, there's your prime, Mike, Russia, China or North Korea, or from hacktivists, criminals or extremists, the cyber threat can bring down our national infrastructure and undermine our democracy. So this has got the full spectrum of we're trying to grab the threat from Russia. That's a fear factor. China, fear factor, North Korea. But if you're doing something, you're hacking, my goodness, you can destroy the country. Criminals and the extremists, of course, are the people qualified as extreme right wing in that grid. So, interesting statement, no evidence whatsoever to back up the claim that the cyber attacks for NATO have increased by 60%. We have not seen any evidence at all. If anybody can direct us at that evidence or provide it, we would certainly like to see it. So on she goes, and she said, we've got to invest in our war fighting division. And it is critical we honour the commitments we made in the Strategic Defence Review 2015 to maintain a world-class divisional war-fighting capability through upgrades and new vehicles equipped to win wars in the information age. Mm-hmm. We're talking about vehicles, but it's information age, with advanced sensors and automated search, tracking and detection systems. Now, what's interesting about this statement is the use of divisional war fighting capacity. What she's doing is trying to skim over the fact that the British Army is now so small, it can only put two divisions onto the battlefield, and it cannot sustain those divisions for any significant period of time. So the British Army has been reduced from an army to just being able to put out two divisions, and a division usually being about 20,000 men. So this is a very, very small unit. Why has the British Army been cut? It had to be cut in order to balance force levels within the EU Defence Union project. So this is weasel wording. What she's really saying is we don't have a British Army anymore. We can simply field a division. And she goes on. At DFID, in my previous job, I did a huge amount of work on drones. new designs able to lift heavy payloads and get medicine and supplies into conflict zones and solve many headaches that humanitarians were facing. We boosted creativity through challenge funds and setting up an innovation hub. I think we should be doing more of this in defence and supporting growth. So apparently they were testing out military drones within the Department for International Development Aid scheme. This is pretty cynical stuff, Mike. Mm. And having tested those drones out in areas where people are suffering, we're now going to bring this innovation back into the British military. The callousness of this statement is I'm lost for words on it, because I think this is some of the most dangerous stuff that we've seen coming out of a minister. I'm going to carry on. I want to put on record my congratulations to Brigadier Celia Harvey, who was selected today to be the Deputy Commander Field Army as a Major General, the third female Army Major General 2-star and the first female Reserve 2-star. My congratulations to her. And what's she doing here? This is my words, but her objective is for women to be fully integrated into, if not lead, the UK state's war machine. So femininity is going to be transformed. So we're going to get rid of anything to do with what many would consider very powerful and important characteristics. Gentleness, empathy, sensitivity, caring, sweetness, compassion. That's all out. We're now going to run the military. So if we have ladies present in the audience today, and I'm sure we have, what is coming is simply the super soldier. They're not really interested in if you're a man or a woman. This is something a lot more callous. And it gets better because she ended on this. We'll never forget what the army accomplished on D-Day 75 years ago. It still inspires us still today. An achievement which founded not on having the most powerful weapons, but on having people equipped with extraordinary courage, ingenuity and determination. Today's army shares those qualities, and our people are going out on their way across the globe to make a difference, protecting innocence, lifting people out of poverty. Well, this is remarkable. You are joining the army not to defend the country as a patriot. You are going to be part of the Conservatives' war machine, lifting people out of poverty. This is...
How do you do that?
Well, Mike, this is... You could say it is simply nonsense, but of course it's much more dangerous than that, because we're getting a look inside this lady's head, and this is the agenda that they think they're running. She goes on, it's going to provide hope for others from Estonia to Afghanistan, from Iraq to southern Sudan. Yet as we look into the future, an age in which the dangers are changing and growing, we will depend on our people more than ever. So we must look after them like never before. That's my priority. It's those last two statements, Mike, which I think are the dangerous ones, because by looking after the military, she's not looking after people in a compassionate sense. She means we are going to get the army fully politicised in order to do the agenda of this emerging rules-based international order. I find this very dark, sinister stuff. I've labelled her their priestess for internal security and war. Why have I done that? Because have a look at this article back in May 2017, Europe's defence minister roles become female stronghold. So we've now got Penny, the priestess, added to the cabal. And what the article said was that Europe's defence ministers gathered in Brussels this week. All eyes were on the newcomer, Sylvie Goulard, the former Liberal MEP who's been appointed France's Armed Forces Minister. The meeting to discuss ways of boosting EU-NATO cooperation and the use of joint EU battle groups, there's Defence Union, were all of the five of the bloc's largest economies, apart from Britain, were represented by women. Now we've got Penny Mordaunt. And who are they reporting to? Arch-Priestess Federica Mogherini.
Yes.
So now we see the true picture. And this is the comment which I thought was the icing on the cake. The report said, I'd like to think the glass ceiling has been broken, said Alexandra Ashbourne Walmsley, an associate fellow of the Royal United Services Institute. It shouldn't be a thing anymore, but actually it will be until the US has a female defense secretary. So there's a premonition of what's coming, but the whole military infrastructure is now being put in the hands of women. And that is certainly not to make it more compassionate and loving, to lift people out of poverty. Something extremely dark is brewing.
Brian, I think you're just being nostalgic. So here's Michel Barnier, who is reported as having said once again that Brexit was a product of nostalgia for a powerful global Britain. So nostalgia for a powerful global Britain has resulted in Brexit. Well, that rang a bell with me, and I just wanted to remind everybody of this report from Demos, At Home in One's Past, Nostalgia as a Cultural and Political Force, because the question is, where is Barnier getting this idea from? Well, this report came out last year, and here's the front page, and this is part of what they say. Britain, France and Germany are experiencing profound levels of social, economic and cultural transformation, and the breadth and depth of this change has been alienating for many citizens, to the extent that many feel unwilling or even incapable of looking to the future. Each country holds a varied and complex history of nostalgic narratives, some of which have gained renewed salience in a period in which citizens no longer accept a doctrine of progress. And so very much Brexit in this document was being blamed on nostalgia and people looking backwards rather than looking forwards. But I just wanted to remind everybody where this idea had come from in the first place, because this Demos report was in fact supported by Open Society Foundation and George Soros. And that's absolutely, in my opinion, where this idea has come from. Once again, in the last few minutes or few hours, expressed by Michel Barnier.
And interesting, Mike, that if you look at the organisation Demos itself, what does Demos constantly do? But it goes back in time to boast of its roots out of communist doctrine. So Demos is embedded in its own nostalgia, but points a finger at anybody else who says, actually, we're not on board for the new rules-based international order and its change agenda. But Soros funding it again and driving the political agenda in UK. It's interesting how this man is allowed to get away with this.
Absolutely. Now, of course, the Peterborough by-election is taking place tomorrow, and the Brexit Party is standing. This is something which UKIP didn't really do very much, but the Brexit Party's decided to stand for this. And their candidate is a gentleman called Mike Green, who's a lifelong Conservative Party supporter, but he's moved over to the Brexit Party, a multimillionaire, the Brexit Party suddenly promoting national policies, as we're about to see, including economic policies. So here's Richard Tice. He put this out on Twitter yesterday.
We're proud to announce our proposals for British Steel. The steel industry is of strategic national importance. It needs to be organised, financed and managed accordingly. So we're announcing that British Steel should become a strategic national corporation, part private sector, part government long-term patient capital, and part employee-owned, to motivate and improve productivity. This is what we stand for in the Brexit Party, a different, smarter, wiser way of doing things. We're looking to change politics for good.
So, British Steel is to become a national corporation. Now, when he pushed that tweet out yesterday, if I looked at many of the responses to that, much of it was suggesting that this was nationalisation that he was talking about, but actually it's not nationalisation. So I ask people to think very carefully about this. What he's talking about is a national corporation. That's a private company, which is part owned privately, part owned by the government, part owned by the people that work in it. And I have to say that reminds me very much of 1930s Italy in particular, and Mussolini's corporatist state.
Yeah.
This is the policy which is being proposed here. And I think people need to look beyond any suggestion that this is nationalisation, because it isn't, and think very carefully about what the Brexit Party seems to be beginning to represent.
It's representing international trade Mike, under the rules-based international system, as far as I can see.
Right.
And this falls right into it. And it's remarkable that they're suddenly talking about steel as a strategic industry, which of course it is, but they will not talk about EU Defence Union, which is swallowing everything to do with defence, including production and procurement.
Well, now, let's just talk about British Steel for a second, because it turns out that Mike Green, lifelong Conservative Party supporter, as we say, he's standing for the Brexit Party in Peterborough. But he, of course, made some of his millions from buying up M Local, which was part of Morrison's. This was the local stores that belonged to Morrison's supermarkets. He bought that up, backed by money from Grey Bull Capital. That's the same Grey Bull Capital that has put British Steel in the position that it's in at the moment. So it's perhaps a little bit ironic that the Brexit Party has suddenly decided, since they chose him as their candidate, that British Steel needs to be a company that's regarded as something of national importance.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more research to do on the Brexit Party and the bad boys of Brexit, but I think we'll cover that in due course. Mm. We'll end with a Guardian article bringing us back to Trump and balloons. But this was the caption, "Take your hands off our NHS." A very interesting article, again, because you could say the journalists were starting to see something, but they still haven't connected all the dots. But this is what was said, even when it's in the process of being deliberately run down by the Conservatives so it can be finally privatised. Our National Health Service makes America's arrangements look monstrous by comparison. So those of us who have long suspected that privatisation is the ideological end goal for many Conservative right-wingers were left unsurprised when the US ambassador, Woody Johnson, essentially said that our entire economy was up for grabs in a post-Brexit trade deal. Trump echoed this sentiment. So absolutely right, Guardian, the NHS virtually privatised. There's only a thin veneer of the original NHS left underneath it. The Conservatives have hollowed it out and privatised it. And of course, American medical companies have been a power house for helping that privatisation process so they can feed off the NHS in UK. This is part of Brexit, which is effectively saying we're going to come clear of the European Union. Well, we won't, because defence will be left behind under EU Defence Unit. But everything else is to be sold off to a capitalist system reminiscent of Italy. Mm. We'll end there.
Okay.
That's it for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, occasionally people say to us, UK Column, we'd very much like you to put some humour into your reports because we need cheering up. And whilst we do from time to time embark on some mainly very dry humour, and we're very happy to do that, we think our time is better spent getting out the facts about what is really taking place so that people could understand it, rather than softening the blow by allowing people to enjoy themselves with some giggly good humour. Maybe there's a balance on that. We are listening to what viewers and listeners say, but at the moment we think the events in UK are so serious they've got to be delivered on a cold plate to our audience. We'll see what you think. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.